This is the Observations Podcast for Saturday, the 12th of January, 2025. Our first podcast back from our holiday hiatus. It's good to be back. I'm Dale Franks. And I have no sound from Michael Wade. I was getting some sound from you earlier. Okay, well, there's a little sound. So that's better. So, yeah, forgive us. We haven't done this for about 3 weeks, so we're trying to remember how all of this stuff works. And I don't remember how to turn off the stupid Zoom menu. It's some button, but I don't remember what the button is so that we don't see that Zoom menu on the bottom of the screen. It wasn't on earlier, now it is. I don't know what's going on. Anyway, good to be back. Michael and I, of course, we've talked in the interim, so I think a little of this will be a recap. But to start off, why don't you talk about the text that you sent me just a little bit earlier today about the fires in California?
Yeah, you know, all this, I keep hearing about all the charities to give to help all these poor people who are, their houses are going up in flames. And I guess I'm just a bit flummoxed as to why does she care that about the people who did this to themselves? They voted for this. This is what they wanted. And they're getting it good in heart.
You know, this problem in California goes back really years. It goes all the way back to the snail darter. It is the elevation of environmental concerns, many of them largely made up, as it turns out. Guess what? There is no snail darter. It's
funny
not,
that.
Yeah. You know, we're learning all of the stuff that these environmental restrictions were more or less built on lies. The National Forest Service has largely decided to stop trying to do controlled burns in California because it's 3 or 4 years in federal court every time they announce a plan. Millions of gallons of waters have just been allowed to run into the Sacramento River and out into the Pacific Ocean. Some reservoirs we are filling. Some reservoirs we're ignoring. Right up above Pacific Palisades, there's like a 17 million gallon reservoir. It's totally dry. It's been dry for a couple of years now. Why? Back in 2017 in California, we voted for a bond issue to borrow the money to build more reservoirs. That was 8 years ago. None of them have been built. I don't know where that...
Yeah, that's right.
Don't know where all that money went for those bond issues. Didn't go to build reservoirs. So brush clearing, backfires, all of that, none of it ever gets done. And then when something like this happens, the first thing out of the mouths of the mayor and the governor of California, well, climate change.
Yeah. Well, they certainly, well, that and it's Trump's fault.
Yeah, Trump's fault. The guy who hasn't been president for 4 years, it's his fault. The people who've actually been mayor and governor for the last six, no, not their fault. Couldn't possibly be. I just, and this... By the way, this climate change claim is bad for two reasons. If you just take a little time to think about it. Number one, it's literally the same argument that a Roman or a Greek might have made 2,000 years ago. Well, you know, it's the gods. We have angered the gods. And what can you do? The gods are going to show us their wrath. Nothing we could do. This is all the fault of the gods. And that's what the climate change argument is attempting to do. The problem is, let's say you really believe the climate change thing. Okay, great. Then that imposes on you a greater, not a lesser duty to do everything you possibly can to ameliorate these fires.
Right.
It doesn't release you from responsibility. It makes your responsibility even greater because we know what the forestry and land management techniques are to mitigate the possibility of raging wildfires. We just won't do it. And we got a one-party state here. I looked up the voter registration in Los Angeles. 13.2% of the electorate in Los Angeles County are registered Republicans.
I'm surprised it's that high.
13.2. Well, it is high compared to, say, San Francisco, which only has 8%. But 13.2, and I sort of waggishly wrote earlier this week that, you know, voters in Los Angeles are so pissed that it may substantially increase Republican registration to as high as 13.5%. You get what you want in a democratic society. I mean, assuming, you know, there's been a lot of talk since 2020 about election cheating, but it does seem to me whenever your opponents can only register 13.2% of the electorate, that your need to cheat in an election in California is relatively small, except maybe at the House of Representatives level. But at the city and state level, Democrats outnumber Republicans by 2-1. Los Angeles, 13.2% registered Republicans. San Francisco, 8% registered Republicans. Yes, there are some counties that have 40 or 50,000 residents that are strongly Republican counties. But the one county that has 10 million people, 13.2% are Republicans. When you have numbers that good, you know that you're probably going to get reelected. Winning the Democratic primary in most places in California is essentially winning the election.
Yeah, essentially.
And these are the people who have been running this state for the past, you know, at least decade. I mean, you can count Arnold Schwarzenegger as a Republican governor, I suppose. But outside of that, it's been Democrats all the way back to Gray Davis. It's been 25 years, basically, of Democrats running it. And certainly outside of Arnold Schwarzenegger, there hasn't been a Republican elected to a statewide office in this state for about 20 years. Okay, so what's the pushback on this going to be? And I suspect there will be none.
I don't know. I mean, if you would think that, especially where, you know, the places that are burning, a lot of rich people live there, a lot of donors. You would think that that might urge them to maybe think a little bit more about who they're putting in office.
Well, look, they had a chance to think a little bit more because, what's his name, Kevin Caruso, lifelong Democrat who thought that Karen Bass was so incompetent that she needed a challenger, he switched parties just to run as a Republican against her, which, of course, instantly made him a Nazi and a fascist and all of that other stuff. And all the big Hollywood people came out for Karen Bass, the same woman who last year cut the fire department's budget by $17 million and this year is asking about an additional $48 million in cuts. I mean, it got to the point that even the fire chief of Los Angeles yesterday, or day before yesterday, in an interview when she was asked, did the city of Los Angeles fail you? Yes. And then she came back in yesterday and said, look, my job is to tell the city what we need to do what we want to do. They want to cut our budget. We're going to have to close 16 stations. We're going to have to get rid of 180 firefighters, blah, blah, blah. Hey, this is what the city is doing. So, I mean, she's largely blaming the mayor without saying it by name.
And although she did get a good talking to from the mayor.
Yes, she got called onto the carpet, as it were. Yeah, they didn't want to sweep that under the rug, if you know what I mean. But okay, fine. But the people that live in those areas voted for this. You know, the Democrats like to put themselves as the party of the, you know, the working class. They aren't. They're the party, basically, of those who are dependent on the government and the rich in this country.
They're very rich, yes.
And hey, this is what you voted for. It's hard to have sympathy. Well, I mean, I have some sympathy for people. It doesn't matter if you're rich or poor. If you lose your home, maybe if you're rich, you have other avenues for recovery that make your life easier, but you know, what's gone is gone. And if you've had a home there for, you know, 20, 30 years, everything is gone. Your entire life, all of your memories, everything that are bound up in that place are gone. And that's the same no matter how rich you are. Now, at some point of riches, when you say, yes, I lost one of my houses in the LA fires. Okay, maybe you'll be fine. But that's not true for most people. Most people don't have multiple houses like that. Even the rich people in LA, I mean, they've put in, these are multi-million dollar homes. They're gone. Oh, by the way, good luck rebuilding any of those homes.
Yeah.
The permit.
Yeah, Adam Carolla made a really interesting podcast about that.
Yeah. The permit process in Los Angeles takes 3 to 5 years.
Yeah. And just to get remains bulldozed is a painful process. It's an expensive process. I mean, you're going to spend at least $150,000 in permitting, $150,000 to $200,000 in permitting before you even break any ground.
And by the way, for many of these people, they're not going to have fire insurance that's going to pay for that.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, State Farm left the state completely because the state refused to allow them to raise prices. Oh, and by the way, day before yesterday, the insurance commissioner came out and said, oh, if you're doing business in California, you can't cancel any policies.
Yeah, I don't, that seems a little beyond the purview of the commissioner.
Yeah, well, I mean, what you say is okay, fine, but you can't make us sell policies,
right?
And if California refuses, because you know premiums are regulated here, they refuse to allow people to raise the prices for fire insurance. Mm-hmm. But if you're not going to do your job, then why should we bear the cost? What this really does is, rather than spend the money, because in LA, what Mayor Bass wanted to spend the money on was, you know, homeless stuff and things like that.
Migrants.
Yeah, migrant support. You know, why fund the fire department? Why fund one of the two basic services that cities are supposed to fund? Why fund those? There are all these other services. Well, you can't then take the cost that is the entirely foreseeable product of your policy, result of your policy. You can't then just shove that onto the insurance company and say, hey, this is your fault. You're the ones offering insurance. You got to pay up.
Yep.
And then tell them they can't cancel policies and they can't leave the state and they can't raise rates.
Yeah, that seems, and I don't see how that works. It seems to be meddling in the contracting system.
You know, it's the exact opposite of the banking crisis, you know, where you privatize profits and make losses public. They're doing the exact opposite. They're privatizing the advantages and then, or making the advantages public and then privatizing the losses.
Yeah.
And so, you know, a lot of these people.
I mean, to the point that there's a bunch of people who have private firefighters.
Yeah, well,
Kevin Caruso
saved the Pacific Palisades Mall because he hired a private fire department to protect the place. That doesn't come cheap. By the way, Chris and I were watching some of the live coverage yesterday, and they had one of the guys from these private fire departments, and he was on screen. He's in this high-vis jacket with the reflective stripes, and he's talking about, you know, the difficulty of fighting these fires. I couldn't help but notice that this jacket was completely unstained. It looked like he had just pulled it out of the box for the first. I was told, Chris, that must be his TV jacket.
Right.
Because that ain't the jacket of a working man who's fighting fires. I have to ask a question. And it's highly speculative. Some would even call it conspiratorial. Is it possible that these fires were not an accident?
Well, we know at least some of them were.
Yeah, there is a problem in Los Angeles with the homeless. Maybe you've heard about it. I'm not sure. And it's winter. And so many of them who live around the hills, around some of these residential areas, they live up in the hills, they go up into the brush. It's cold, so they start fires. So it's possible that this was, you know, some of this was out of control fires. They're certainly investigating the Palisades fire as arson.
Right. And arson, not as an accidental, you know, fire. Yes, to keep it warm.
A deliberately set.
Right.
Fire arson. Huh? By who?
Well, you know, they've caught some of those Antifa types up in like Washington and Oregon, setting fires. It wouldn't shock me if at least some of the fire were deliberately set by people like that. It certainly comports with the area where they were set.
I'll just put it this way. I'm going to look very carefully, or I'm going to try to look very carefully, at who starts buying up property in Pacific Palisades. And that's all I'm going to say. You know,
maybe Trump's going to buy it all.
You know, I used to think that you could explain most of the stupid stuff and even evil stuff that government does through stupidity or incompetence.
Yeah. What's that? Hanlon's razor, right?
Yeah. At some level of stupidity, you have to start looking at malevolence.
Mm-hmm.
And with all of the things that are happening, all the things that we've seen over the past 4 years, at what point do we just start assuming malevolence instead of incompetence? You know, you can look at the border, the people who've been coming across at the border, the Biden administration just coming out and saying, hey, you know, we're going to let people from all of these countries, including some states that are essentially terrorist states, we're just going to let them stay here for another 18 months. Now, what are you going to do? Try getting rid of them now. First of all, you let them in the first place. Now you're keeping them here. Is that stupidity or is that malevolence?
Yeah, I definitely think that's malevolence.
You know,
and stupid.
Yeah, I mean, you can't discount stupidity. I mean, because most of the people, look, if it wasn't for crime or government, there wouldn't be much for the bottom third of your high school graduating class to do. Having said that, it's difficult to just say stupidity is the reason for the sheer level of incompetence. Now, I did see a partial explanation. Somebody wrote earlier this week about how, look, if you were to get elected mayor or governor, you would see the use of the powers that are granted to you by those offices as a duty to work for the public good. So you would see that job as a duty to make life better for other people because you're a normal person. But the people that we elect nowadays see those jobs not as a duty, but as an opportunity for corruption, an opportunity to enlarge their friends, to send contracts. That's one of the things that Karen Bass did, sent out a bunch of lucrative contracts to various NGOs run by friends and supporters. And for many places in this country, elected office has really reverted back into a 19th century spoil system.
More like a patronage system. I mean, they have to grease a lot of palms on the way up the ladder. You get into office, you're expected to pay that back somehow.
I just don't see how we have come to this position. And you can talk about climate change and you can talk about all these other things, but at some point there has to be an acknowledgement that the imposition of some of these policies are just done willingly for nefarious purposes.
Yeah, well, and not necessarily, maybe malevolent isn't always the right word, sometimes maybe, but just for greedy, self-serving reasons. You know, the office is being used, like you said, to support their friends, grease palms, to buy future votes and donations. I mean, it's an opportunity to cement yourself into a job for life. Even if you leave the public sector, all those palms that were greased are going to welcome you with open arms.
Sure, but I mean, look at what happened in Congress this last week. I mean, we voted to, deport immigrant child molesters, and 158 Democrats voted against it. What's that about?
Yeah, but their explanations didn't make much sense.
Why do we have to have sex books in elementary schools that, show kids how oral sex is performed? Why are we taking prepubescents and deciding that they have to transition to women before they hit puberty, or men, or vice versa, whichever they transition one way or the other before they even hit puberty? Why? What's the justification for that? What is one that makes sense that does not, at the end of the day, have some sort of explanation of malevolence behind it?
True that, and I mean that's an old Marxist Gramscian goal anyway. Separate parents and children to kill the old and create the new communist man. I mean that's been a play since Marxism began.
I've just begun losing a lot of hope for the future, because
I didn't know you still had any left.
this is, look, this has become so entrenched in society, certainly entrenched in the Democratic Party. And Donald Trump is not going to stop it. He's not going to turn it around. He might give us a 4-year breathing space, but look, Ronald Reagan, same thing. He didn't stop any of this.
True.
It just delays things a little bit. As far as
Yeah,
I
well,
can.
stop Leviathan. It's hard to stop Leviathan once it starts moving.
Yeah, but look, it's not just Leviathan. It's the culture. It's the millions of people in this country who sign on to these weird ideologies. In the absence of common sense, if you lose the culture, you've lost everything. And it seems to me that we've lost the culture. I mean, as far as I can tell, we're just watching the slow motion collapse of Western civilization. And only the fact that we are so rich and have hundreds of years of, equity built up, that's keeping us rolling along as good as we are.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And that's how Rome, became undone. Everybody stopped caring about being a Roman.
Yeah, so I'm wondering, are we going through the equivalent of third century Rome, which was sort of fixed up in the 4th century by Constantine and was allowed to drag on for another 100 years, at least 50 years of it, relatively healthily, before it finally collapsed? Or is are the Vandals approaching the gates of Rome? Where are we at historically? I'm not sure.
I mean, we're certainly fighting those battles. Europe is almost entirely gone. Eastern Europe is really the only place that's very vociferously hung on to Western values and ideals. And there's certainly a large cadre of people here in the United States who have infested our places of learning. That want to see Western society collapse.
Yeah, most somebody wrote, "Every empire falls, often from within." That's hi chat. Welcome back. That's from Inebriated Plutarch. I would say probably most empires do fall because of rot from within. That's certainly why Rome fell. And we seem to be heading the same way. One of the other things that people have been talking about this week are, the rape gangs in England. Largely Pakistani men who are involved in it, but you can't talk about it. You certainly can't say that. Heck, Tommy Robinson is in prison for releasing a documentary. Yeah, again, for releasing a documentary that just comes out and says it. Look, these are the people who are raping little girls in England. And you have the social services. There was another one in was it Austria or Germany, where a 12-year-old girl was raped at a train station. And the first guy prosecuted was acquitted because, as the judge said, they were unable to provide positive proof that she did not consent. She was 12.
It's just, you know, that just kind of reminds me of that story you like to tell about, talking about clash of cultures, about when the British had taken over India, and was the custom, when the patron died, then they would burn his wife. And what did the guy say? What did
the British general, they came and told, the custom is called sati. So when the husband dies, if the wife is still alive, she's placed on the funeral pyre and she's burned alive with her husband. And so a bunch of Indians came in and said, this is our tradition. And he said, we also have a tradition. We hang men who burn women alive. So let us each observe our traditions.
Yeah, it seems like that would have been a good place to bring up that story in that trial.
Yeah, but the idea that a 12-year-old, we can't prove that this 12-year-old didn't consent.
How can a 12-year-old consent to gang rape?
I should have thought that even Germany had statutory rape laws, although this is a country that as soon as you step out of the gate at Frankfurt am Main Airport, you run right into a Beate Uze porn shop right in the main concourse as soon as you walk in. So, you know, obviously the Germans are a little more liberal about some things than we are, but I just don't understand how you figure a 12-year-old girl consented to having sex with 8 strange men in a train station.
Yeah, it seems pretty implausible.
And by the way, you have to prove that there was no consent. Now, fortunately, in the United States, our law is set up a little bit differently. If you're under 18, it's statutory rape. There's no get out of jail free card.
You can't give consent.
Yeah, she wanted it. Ain't a defense.
Yeah, there are a few like Romeo and Juliet laws, like if they're within 2 years of each other or something. And it's a little bit lower in some states. Like I think it goes as low as like 16 some places. But we have. You can't give consent until a certain age. It's not possible to consent.
By the way, that reminds me of the comedian Taylor Tomlinson. There's a clip of her out on the internet where she was doing some crowd work in a crowd, and she's talking to somebody in the crowd, and she said, you know, so how long have you two been together? 7 years. Okay, and how old are you? 26. How old is he? 23. I'm not good at math, but I'm good at knowing what the law is.
Oops. You didn't happen to be a teacher at one point, did you?
So, no, actually there are 2 kids who've known each other since they were in elementary school, apparently. But anyway, 16 and 19 is pretty much, in many states, is outside the acceptable bounds of conduct. So that kind of thing wouldn't happen here. But this compassion towards migrants that the Europeans have is largely destroying their society. And the weird thing is...
The European elites.
Yeah. But the weird thing is that so many people agree with it. It's something that Gad Saad has started to call suicidal empathy. You just care for other people so much that you're willing to just...
Well, it's like that lady in Germany that got raped and refused to testify. because she was afraid that the guy might get sent back to whatever awful place he came from. It's like, honey, that's not how it works.
Yeah, that was in Germany. She was raped by this guy, and then when it looked like if he was convicted, he would be deported, she didn't want him convicted. Because, oh, can't have him deported. There you go. That's a perfect example of suicidal empathy.
Yeah, that just makes no sense. I mean, what do you think the law is for?
You know, but there are so many people in this country who are fully on board with all of this. And
until they get migrants sent into their Tony neighborhoods.
Yeah, until migrants show up in Martha's Vineyard, then all of a sudden it's a problem. Well, you know, it's like New York City. New York City is a sanctuary city. Mm-hmm. Well,
okay, we think you're taking this a little too seriously.
We're not a fanatic about it. But, yeah, people, you know, and maybe, you know, they always say a conservative is a liberal who got mugged. Maybe people in Los Angeles will take a closer look, but you know what? I doubt it. I really think that the mind virus of Marxism has so infused the left side of the political sphere that it's largely unrecoverable.
Well, and they've also, I mean, we're much less religious now than we used to be. So they replaced, you know, whatever religion and those dogmas with this secular dogma, and they don't have any other way to virtue to, you know, to show their virtue, to virtue seek.
No, and here's the thing, at least Christianity has apologetics. Mm-hmm. You know, so there are people who can explain Christian doctrine, the purposes, how it, you know, came about. There's no apologetics for some of these beliefs. It really is just assertion.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Believing this makes you a good person.
It seems right, but we're being nice to this person. And don't you want to be nice to people? Shouldn't you be nice to people?
Yeah, let's not look at what the ultimate results of these policies might be. The fact that we support these policies is what makes us good people. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Because it is a secular religion, people will follow that religion even to their detriment, because that's how I prove that I'm a good person. I believe the right thing.
They have no other way, another path to virtue.
We're a very confused society. And
yeah.
And this LA fires thing, like, and Trump, this is the weird thing. Trump, not a guy who, as far as I know, has made a lifelong study of fire prevention. But you can go back all the way to 2016, where Trump is telling California, you have to do these forestry management and land management functions, or else wildfires are going to continue.
Right.
You can't just send all that water. You've got to fill reservoirs. You've got to build new reservoirs. You've got to do
cutting to the federal coffers and expect us to pay for it when you didn't mitigate.
Yeah. Well, that's Trump's point. California does nothing. Then there's a wildfire and they turn right around and say, okay, well, it's your turn, federal government, to give us all the money.
Yeah. And that's ludicrous.
And the federal government, by the way, has been doing it. Whether that will continue for the next 4 years. But look, even if Trump did everything that I wanted to do, everything I would want him to do, which I don't for a minute think he will. But even if he did, it over the long term, it won't matter. Because that's all politics. If you don't fix the culture, none of the political stuff matters long term.
Well, it does depend on how voters see it going forward too. In 4 years, do they elect people like Trump or DeSantis or JD Vance? You know, are those the models that people trust more? I mean, you have to have some sort of permanence in order to keep pushing the ball forward. Otherwise, you're right. It'll collapse back to the mean.
But how are people dumb enough to listen to Gavin Newsom sit there and, like, 2 days ago, he just flat out lied.
Yeah.
There was a bill that he vetoed for reservoirs. And he just flat out said, I never vetoed that. I would never do that. But he did. You can just go to the...
He also said there's water in the reservoirs.
Yeah, and they're...
None of them are dry.
Yeah, except that's not true. We have pictures of the Palisades Reservoir dry as a bone. Missing 17... Nets. Yeah, And as far as I can tell, they expect people to believe them, or at least enough people to believe them to keep voting for them. And as far as I can tell, they're correct. People still believe them, and those same people will vote for them.
Well, and they get backed by, you know, their buddies in the news stations and the legacy news, cable news. And, you know, because everybody's so leftist out in California, they don't pay attention to anything else. Oh, those are just Fox News lies. Faux news.
Yeah, I don't... You know, any sort of optimism I had is just being slowly drained out of me. And, you know, here at home, Chris gets upset at me that I'm not I'm too optimistic. So, you know, you can imagine how pessimistic she is compared to me. And I'm no, you know, I'm no ray of light. I think the whole civilization is falling apart. I'm just hoping that
we can... It's certainly going in that direction and not in a better direction.
I'm just hoping that we can keep it together for long enough. Basically, I'm hoping that Donald Trump's second term and maybe whoever follows him creates sort of the equivalent of... 4th century Roman emperors who managed to drag the thing along for another 30 or 40 years until I shuffle off of this mortal coil. So, you know, keep this thing going for another 30 years. Just let me have my house and let me have my car and my job and my Social Security and just let me get through the next 30 years and then it won't be my problem anymore.
Yeah, well, I've got kids, so...
Yeah, well, I hope you're raising them to hunt and fish. And build fires.
They're good at building fires.
Yeah, that's
and good. They are good at fishing.
Okay, well, then they may be okay. Because that's what, you know, that's... I envision a future 50 years hence when people are just walking through the deserted streets of Manhattan wondering at what it must have been to live in that society.
Well, there won't be anybody living there. So they're not going to have any food. They're not going to have any water. They're not going to have any electricity.
Yeah, yeah. There are so many policies that are so stupid. It's like this whole electric vehicle policy.
Mm-hmm.
How are we going to support that? We can't generate the power.
We can't support it now.
Yeah, you know, in the summers here in California, I mean, you might as well be living in, you know, Nigeria. We have freaking brownouts.
Yeah.
Because we can't generate enough electricity. We can't build any more electrical plants because... The environmental rules just make it nearly impossible. We have so constricted ourselves that and yet we pretend that, well, we can all just have electric vehicles. We can all just charge them up. You know, I mean, assuming it's that the lithium ion batteries in your Tesla don't, you know, catch on fire in your garage and burn your house down. Good luck with that. That probably won't happen because you won't be able to charge the damn thing anyway.
I'm just always amazed by how incredulous or how credulous people are. When Chris drove from San Diego to Scottsdale, visit a friend. She went to the Avis place right around the corner from where she stays. And we're going to give her an electric car. She's like, You know where I'm going. I told you I'm going to Scottsdale. And they're like, yeah, you can charge it along the way. How about I'm running through the middle of the desert? There's no place to charge it out there. So that she made them give them a give her a truck, this huge behemoth.
Yeah, because
Not so
even.
great on gas mileage, but she knew at least we'd get there.
Yeah, but she knew it would get there. And by the way, let's say you're taking your Tesla across country. Okay, so we can drive to Yuma on day one from San Diego. Then we're gonna have to stay overnight. Then we can drive to maybe, well, from Yuma. I don't think you could make it. Maybe you could make it to Las Cruces, New Mexico. And then you're done for the day. You're gonna start. I
Yeah.
mean, it's a real leisurely trip.
Well, and it's going to be zigzaggy.
It's just you're not gonna get anywhere very fast.
No. Yeah,
Assuming
our friend.
that you can find a charging station.
I had a friend do that, the one that works and isn't already occupied. I had a friend who did that from here in the DC area all the way down to the Keys in his Tesla. I was like, did you have to stop a lot? He's like, yes. Like sometimes it would be 20 minutes, then like 40 minutes, and then I could go like an hour, and then I would have to stop again. It must have stopped 25 times.
Yeah, it's just not sustainable. Now, look, there could be something. Look, that's a problem with the electric vehicle technology itself. I mean, that's completely separate from charging problems and anything like that. That's just a range problem and a length of time to recharge problem. That's a battery technology problem.
Yeah.
With the solid state battery technology that we've seen some breakthroughs about in the last 6 to 18 months, maybe in a decade, the range and charge time problem will largely be solved.
I don't know why we just don't go to hybrids.
But,
Let's push hybrids.
you know, one of the things that Toyota has been constantly pushing is hybrids. The head of Toyota has said multiple times, hybrids solve 95% of the problems, and the technology exists now,
Yeah.
and it works with current technology and current
Yeah.
infrastructure. You
They don't
fill up
blow up.
the car, the gasoline engine is largely a generator that provides electrical power, and it's a little four-stroke, two-cylinder motor that has very, very little emissions, and much of your driving is done on the electrical side. We could do that now, but that's not what the call is for. The call is not for 98% emission reduction. The call is for zero emissions vehicles.
Right.
So the only choice that's available to us are either all electric or hydrogen, which has its own problems.
Yeah.
And if there's no charging infrastructure, there sure as hell no hydrogen infrastructure to get you across the country.
It's a scarce resource.
Yeah, exactly. It ain't cheap to make. It's the most abundant atom in the universe, and yet it costs a ton of money to make. With an energy density substantially lower than gasoline. But there are alternatives. And our entire political system refuses to look at them. Now, is that incompetence or is that malevolence? Is that greed, corruption?
Certainly, greed and corruption are involved, because who gets all those contracts, to build these things, to build better batteries? Those come from government grants,
Yeah,
right?
well, heck, the charging station contracts. I mean, theoretically, we've spent
Yeah,
how many billions of dollars on charging
seven
stations?
hundred billion?
Yeah,
No,
700.
no, 700 million. I can't remember what it was. Seven something.
Yeah,
Might have been 7 billion.
whatever it is, we've built seven stations. $1 billion a station seems
Kind of low.
like an excessive price. But where's all that money gone? Why have we seen nothing for it? You know, it's the same thing like here in California. That bond issue that we voted for in 2017, where's that money?
Yeah.
I mean, there's certainly no reservoirs. Nothing new was built. So what happened to it?
Yeah, I'm sure some friends of Gavin got paid to study and analyze all the potential issues and how to go about it and blah, 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 make recommendations.
You know, we talk about how much money the government spends. We talk, well, Doge can save a lot of money. Maybe it can, because apparently that $700 million or whatever, I think it was $700 million, that $700 million for charging stations didn't build a single charging station.
Yeah.
But that money is gone. It was spent. Mm-hmm. It's out of the budget. I mean, I would be willing to bet that we could probably cut 50% out of just the discretionary budget alone. And we would never notice a difference.
Yes.
And we certainly wouldn't notice a difference in the services that we get provided.
I wouldn't.
And I can't help but think that the same is true at the state level. Once you let the government get so large that it becomes a source of largesse, then it's going to be a source of largesse, and the only people who are going to benefit off of it are the people who contract with the government or work directly with the government.
Yeah, that's right.
And so, you know, every time we go downtown and we go back past the, you know, the San Diego County Administration Building, and I see their stupid county motto, "The noblest motive is the public good."
When I walk back from work, when I'm staying in San Diego, I stay at a place right across the street from there. And I see it every time. And I'm just like, God, what nonsense.
Yeah, because it's not true. And you look at the policies, you know, this is, you wonder why Trump got elected and why Trump got elected and why he got elected in 2016, which we said at the time. We have a government that does not reflect the will of the electorate. And it does not right. have the good of the people, the citizens of this country at its heart.
Yeah, and you're seeing the same thing in France and Germany, the EU level. I mean, European Parliament. There's a lot of pushback. A lot of populism going on because the political elites just do what they think is best and then sell us a bill of goods, put the money in their pockets, and things go on as before.
Yeah. From chat. Hello, chat. By the way, tell us what you think in the comments. And if you're in chat, do it right now in chat. If you're watching this later, do it in comments. How about the train to nowhere? Well, I have good news about that. The state of California announced last week that they have completed the first 1,600-foot bridge for the railroad, which currently is going from, you know, Bakersfield to Fresno. But that 1,600-foot bridge is now built. There are no railroad tracks to the bridge or over the bridge or on the other side of the bridge, because we haven't started laying down any railroad track yet. But the bridge has been constructed, and it now exists in Central California.
You've got almost one lap around a track.
It is literally a 1,600-foot bridge to nowhere for no one. But I guess you need to build the bridge before you can build the railroad, right?
Apparently.
You know,
not sure why that is.
And in 10 years, it'll be there. But you can think of all of these, like the Biden administration's policy on the border, where you just let through millions of people. How is that helpful to United States citizens in any way? I mean,
you know, it's funny because of all the people, the bulwark called their bluff. Well, said the quiet part out loud, I guess I should say, and saying, you know, don't worry about the migrants going back and getting deported. They're not reliable voters. So it doesn't matter. Just let them go back. It's like, oh. So what we've been saying for the last 20 years about you wanted to import new voters because you don't like the ones we have. It was true.
Well, but you know, you can't have the same party that says we care about working class people can't also say we're going to import 30 million immigrants in 4 years.
Yes. Cesar Chavez would have said something about that.
Yeah, because, you know, these are just going to hurt all of the lowest wage and most unskilled workers and prevent them from getting jobs at wages. But look, we've repeatedly done this over the past 30 years. We've basically gutted American manufacturing and we've sent that all overseas because who wants to do those dirty, low-skilled jobs? You should learn to code. Why should we? Why should we make TVs or steel?
Everybody needs a bachelor's degree.
Yeah. Why should we make TVs or steel or anything else when we can just ship that overseas? I mean, you don't want your kids to work in some textile factory, right? I'd prefer that my kids have the ability to work somewhere.
Yeah.
And now, even with, you know, the other thing that happened while we were away that really got me irked was the H-1B visa thing.
Where the whole spat.
Yeah, where Vivek Ramaswamy comes out and says, well, if you Americans weren't so lazy and stupid and, you know, weren't so interested in football and stuff, then you could have the best and brightest. But you are lazy and stupid, so we need to bring in a whole bunch of H-1B visa holders to do the jobs that you're too dumb to do because you spent too much time watching football and not enough time at weekend science fairs.
I'm not sure if that's how he said it, but
that's how I read it.
He had a point in that, you know, the up and coming generations, you know, the millennials and Generation Z, they don't want to put in any more effort than necessary. And they expect to be rewarded no matter what they do. They're not go-getters. They don't, you know, go the extra mile. They're not terribly reliable. And, you know, some kid from India who knows how much better he could have it, they're going to do anything they can. They've got a lot more go and get them.
Yeah, so I guess my question would be, why aren't they making India great again?
Well, they are. It's just a very poor country, and it's not super well ran.
Well, then it seems like they have their work cut out for them.
It's true.
Look, whatever you might want to say about young people, that's something that we can fix, or the real world can fix for them when they get out into it. And I think there is something to be said that because we do have these other interests besides doing the sort of the Asian tiger mom, only science and only math, we also have an independent streak and a willingness to take risks culturally that other societies don't. But you can actually go and look at the H-1B visas that are being given out and the number of them that are out there. And, you know, KPMG is bringing in accountants.
Mm-hmm.
7-Eleven is bringing in cashiers for, you know, $29,000 a year. I'm pretty sure both of those jobs are jobs we could fill with American job applicants. And yeah, then you get the thing like Disney firing 700 IT people and then saying, oh, well, by the way, before you go, if you want a severance package, you have to train the H-1B guys that we bought in to replace you. I'm pretty sure that the impetus behind the H-1B program is not bringing in the best and brightest. By the way, we have a visa for that. It's called the O-1 visa. Mm-hmm. So we actually probably don't need a whole bunch of these H-1B visa people in here because A, they're not the best and brightest, and B, what it looks to me like is happening is we're gaming the system to bring in lower paid foreign labor so that we don't have to pay the prevailing wage rates to Americans.
Absolutely. Yeah. As a matter of fact, Elon Musk, you know, addressed that. He said, yeah, it's the program screwed up. One of the things we could do is, you know, you have to pay, you know, raise the minimums that you have to pay to, you know, something closer to what, you know, the people that they'd be replacing make.
Yeah, that's too easy to game too. Here's the simple way of doing it. Ensure that hiring an H-1B visa holder increases your cost of employment substantially. Just impose an excise tax on every H-1B visa holder you hire.
Well, but that would be the government doing that. Oh, you mean that's one of the ways to fix it?
Yeah, that's one of the ways to fix it. Just say, okay, fine. You want to bring in an H-1B visa holder? You're perfectly free to do so.
The it's more like visa, a tariff on people.
Yeah, the more visa holders you bring in, the higher the excise tax will be. And make it not fully uneconomical, but make it less economical to hire H-1B visa people than to hire Americans. And That way, if you absolutely, at least that way, you won't be hiring an H-1B visa holder until you know you can't hire an American for the appropriate wage. And You could end the whole program being used as it, because we're told that, well, you can only have, like, I think the number is something like 35 or 68,000 a year H-1B visa holders, but there are so many loopholes and so many extensions and so many things like that, that there's about 800,000 H-1B visa holders in the country right now. So that, you know, maximum of 60,000, 65,000, that's far more honored in the breach than the observance, apparently.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're firing people and literally replacing them with H-1B visa people and requiring your American employees that you just fired to train them on their way out the door, that tells me that the purpose of the H-1B visa is not to, as both Elon and Vivek have said, you want to bring in the best and brightest. Yeah, well, we have an O-1 visa for that. Please feel free to use it. The only trouble is, then you have to prove that they are the best and brightest.
Right.
Yeah, in the comments, I heard 84,000 next year, but they can be extended. Yeah, sure they can.
And they get extended.
And by the way, the other thing that makes the H-1B visa program uniquely suited to exploitation is the fact that you can hold that immigrant status over their head, because if you lose your H-1B job, you instantly get shipped back home.
Right.
And so, hey, if you're not willing to work 50 or 60 hours a week, hey, maybe we can't keep you around. Which, by the way, might be the other thing. Do not allow H-1B visa holders to be exempt employees. You have
That's to- not a bad one, actually.
You have to pay them hourly wages, and you want to work them 60 hours a week. Well, guess what?
You got to pay them overtime.
You got to pay them overtime. So you
they have to be non-salaried.
Exactly. You got to bring them in. They have to be hourly workers, and you have to pay them overtime, and you have to go through all of those hoops as well. That plus the excise tax might be helpful.
Because
You want to ensure that you bring people over that you need. Not just to bring people over because it's economically more advantageous to do so than to hire Americans.
Right.
On the other hand, you know, government policy has made hiring Americans, you know, much more costly. You know, it is much cheaper to hire foreigners than it is to hire Americans.
Absolutely.
But that's just, there are so many policies that you can look at and you can just say, this is not working for
And how many of those policies
anybody.
were put in place to fix other bad policies?
Yeah, I just don't. Yeah, and here's the thing. We could fix a lot of stuff simply by making it impossible for any immigrant to have access to any public service at all.
Yeah.
No welfare benefits, no unemployment. You know, people forget that that's the immigration system that we had in the 1800s. You know, people look back at Ellis Island and, well, what about all the immigrants that came back in then? Well, yeah. And once they landed here, nobody was going to support them. Nobody was going
to. Right. You had to prove that you had a place to stay, that you knew somebody, and that you had at least some money on you. Oh, and that you weren't sick.
Yeah, that you weren't sick. No tuberculosis. But once you got here, you were on your own. You had to make it or not make it. And people forget how many of those immigrants that came in the late 1900s and early, late 1800s and early 1900s, how many of them went home?
Oh, yeah. And a bunch of them were turned back at the border because they couldn't provide the requisite information.
Yeah, I mean, there's really a simple principle. You don't get to come to our country unless we think that on net you're going to be a benefit to the country. And if we don't think that, we don't have any moral or legal responsibility to let you in. At the end of the day, we get to decide who gets to become a part of the polity as a whole. And so then you look at the way we've been handling immigration largely since 1986. I mean, people forget that from 1926 to 1986, there was basically a moratorium on immigration to this country. It was just really hard.
Until the chain immigrate. Migration thing, yeah.
Yeah, and now, and that's the other thing, the chain migration. If you can get in, then you can eventually bring in your entire family. That benefits us how exactly?
Yeah, I've never been sure about that myself.
Yeah, I just don't get how these policies get implemented and how we just sort of sit idly by. And then people like Andrew Mayorkas getting up in front of Congress and saying, hey, there's no problem. We got everything under control. When that is so obviously not true.
He should be in jail.
And there are so many people who believe it. Suicidal empathy. It really is an interesting explanation for a lot of things. I saw some British guy on Twitter today saying, you know, I'm getting so tired of these MAGAs saying we don't have free speech in England. We have free speech. There are just some things you're not allowed to say. You know, you can't tell lies or spread misinformation. That's not free speech. Free speech, in that definition, is you are free to say what we allow.
Right. Doesn't sound very free.
No, but there are plenty of people who are willing to sign on to that idea. There are many people in this country. Hell, there's at least one Supreme Court justice in this country who is willing to sign on to the idea that you can have free speech as long as it's approved.
Yeah. There are a few governors that believe that as well.
Yeah. So, the future doesn't look bright with the way that our culture has gone. And I don't know how you recapture a culture that has become so hedonistic, and in the absence of any hardship, why shouldn't you be hedonistic? You live in the richest societies that the world has ever seen. There's an incalculable amount of wealth that's just sitting out there that is being expended theoretically on your behalf. Why wouldn't you become a hedonist?
Yeah. well, what is the saying? Good times make weak men. Weak men make hard times. Hard times make good men.
Yeah, well, we've had a lot of good times. And I...
And speaking about you know, being spent on our behalf, I love that meme of, you know, two sets of rockets flying at each other, you know, presumably in the Middle East. And it's like, paid for with my tax dollars. Somehow also paid for with my tax dollars.
Yeah, it really is. It really is amazing. Wait a second. What is this? Oh, you have the right to agree with the people in power. There were tremendous ethnic affinity organizations that help absorb immigrants. Of course, that was not always good. Mafia back then, and then Tren de Aragua and MS-13 today. I'm not sure that I would define Tren de Aragua and MS-13 as ethnic affinity organizations, although that is certainly...
That seems to be they most prey on is their own Venezuelan kind.
Yeah, although there is certainly some type of affinity going on there. Well, anyway, this is, you know, this has largely just been me screaming about stuff today. I'm sure you have something you'd rather talk about, right?
No, I matter of fact, I wouldn't mind. Ending early because there's a pretty big football game on that I want to watch.
Oh, is there? Well, okay. Well, then I tell you what, buddy. If that is the deal, I can make that happen. That is not beyond the realm of possibility. Have a great
week.
We've
been pessimistic enough today.
Yeah, we've been unremittingly pessimistic. Michael, have a great week. We'll talk to you next week.
You too, bud.
All right. And for everybody else, thanks for joining us this week on what has really been pretty much of a downer, largely because of me, I suppose. But, well, you got to expect it sometimes. I'm the one who's supposed to be pessimistic anyway. Have a great week, and we'll look forward to talking to you again next time. Until then, so long.